right, folks. 60 minutes of fun and music brought to you by Ipana Toothpaste and Style Hepatica. Ipana for the smile of beauty, Style Hepatica for the smile of health. Fun with our star comedian, Fred Allen. Music with Peter Van Steen. New features, new laughs. It's Town Hall tonight. Listen to that crowd cheer Fred Allen as he heads his weekly parade to the old Town Hall. Fred's leading the band with a breadstick, followed by those drums of the stage, the mighty Allen R. Player. Let's join that happy song. Everybody's going. They come. Home, folks.
Are you going crazy cutting that telephone wire, Gerald?
Nobody's bothering me while I'm listening to the radio. It's Town Hall tonight.
Society hostesses.
Are we having entertainment after dinner, Mrs. Van Frey?
We certainly are. The butler is turning on the radio. It's Town Hall tonight.
Tavern customer.
Hey, waiter, how about a little service?
I'll be with you when this radio program's over, brother. It's Town Hall tonight.
Well, here we are inside the old Town Hall, and Peter is opening the show with Stop and Reconsider.
Reconsider, make love the highest bidder.
Can't pay a dime for your kiss to thrill.
Can't buy mansions that don't build.
Pockets empty, but I'm so filled with love that's meant for you. So stop, don't be so choosy. Oh, stop, you've got me woozy.
We've gone together,
shared a dream. Don't say I love the pop. So stop and reconsider.
Be so choosy.
Oh, stop. You've got me woozy. We've gone together and shared a dream. Don't say I love the plot. Oh, stop and reconsider.
Presenting that wild woolly werewolf, wobbling warmed over wheezes, whinnying weak-watered whimsy, wailing wacky windy witticisms, Wagnall's wastrel, Westchester's weary willy, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you. And good evening, ladies. I was looking for him. It finally dawned on me it was I. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, in case you haven't looked at the calendar lately, it's Wednesday again. And if any of you folks at home have dozed off by the radio, we're not going to take any chances. Now, we're going to shoot off a gun here in the studio to make sure everyone's awake at home for our session tonight at the Old Town Hall. All right, Ted. Well, now that we're all bright and chipper, we'll start the ball rolling with the... Get back up on the chairs, folks, if anyone was blown off there. We'll start the ball rolling with the Town Hall news. Did Harry show you how to work the curtain, Andre?
You bet. It's coming right down, Fred.
The lights go out, and we bring you the latest news of the week.
The Town Hall News sees nothing, shows less. New York City, New York. The district attorney, in a recent speech at the Legal Aid Society dinner, suggested a plan to provide penniless offenders with better legal counsel. The district attorney says that the fee-gouging shyster who takes advantage of predicament of his unfortunate clients has got to go. Town Hall News subscribes to District Attorney's attitude and shows the hapless plight of a minor lawbreaker who fell into the clutches of an unscrupulous barrister. The prisoner, one Galahad Dub...
The character Galahad Dub is purely fictional, ladies and gentlemen, and any similarity to any living person is purely coincidental.
The unscrupulous barrister, one renegade Tort,
character Renegade Todd is a figment of Mr. Allen's imagination, ladies and gentlemen, and any similarity to any practicing barrister is purely one of those things.
The trial of the people of New York versus Galahad Dove.
The following trial, ladies and gentlemen, is purely imaginary, and any similarity to any trial ever held or any legal action ever taken in New York or any other state is so much hugger-mugger, if you get what I mean.
And now that the town hall news status is established beyond a doubt, we proceed. This document showing one luckless victim's experience with a gouging lawyer is called The Strange Case of Galahad Dove. On the morning of March 1st, 1937, 1934 rather, Galahad Dove, a whisk broom designer, walking down Broadway, spat his gum out on the sidewalk. The dull, sticky thud of gum had scarcely died away when Galahad Dove heard the voice of the law.
Hey, you.
Me, officer?
Yes, you. What's the big idea spitting that gum on the sidewalk?
Well, I said, no speak English, sir.
Don't give me that. You're under arrest.
Yes, Galahad Dove was arrested, fingerprinted, and rushed pell-mell away to spend the night in jail. The following morning, he was arraigned in court.
Galahad Dove?
Present, Your Honor.
You're charged here with expectorating a mass of tenacious substance commonly used as a masticatory on a sidewalk in New York City. This is a violation of a city ordinance. Guilty or not guilty?
Well, I don't know, Church. I ain't got no lawyer.
The court will appoint a lawyer to defend you. Renegade Tort.
Okay, Judge, I'll take the case.
The unscrupulous attorney is appointed. Galahad Dove is returned to jail. Late that afternoon, Renegade Tort, that wolf in shyster's clothing, calls to see his victim.
Hello, Dove.
Hello. Hey, I gotta get out of here, Mr. Tort.
You're going out of here flying, Dove.
Good. What are you gonna do?
How much dough you got on you?
$10.
Well, fork it over. I gotta start things humming.
The whole $10?
Well, sure. I'm getting you a habeas corpus, that's $3. And now a press, that's two more.
A habeas corpus is $3 and an offer. Well, that's only $5.
Well, I gotta get you a witness, ain't I?
Well, how much is a witness?
Well, I could get you one for $3. But if you want a witness that speaks English, that'll be $5 even.
Well, okay. Here's the $10.
Right. You're going out of here flying.
Hey, what about my case?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. What'd you do?
I spit my gum out on the sidewalk.
A cinch. You're going out of here flying.
But did our hero go out of that jail flying? No, 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 dear friends, no. Galahad Dove was in the clutches of an unscrupulous lawyer. The next morning, his case came up in court again.
Galahad Dove?
Present, Judge.
My client ain't guilty, Your Honor. I got a witness right here.
Your name, madam?
Millie Twerp.
Millie Twerp, did you see the defendant Galahad Dove expectorate his chewing gum on the sidewalk as charged?
Well, I didn't see him spit out the gum, Judge, but I stepped in it and sprained me ankle. I missed two shows.
Two shows? You're an actress?
Yeah, I'm hostess at the Flea Circus. I'm suing this bum for $500 and medical expenses.
Suing me for $500,
Quiet, Dove. You are now the defendant in a joint suit.
$500? All I did
Leave this to me, Dove. I'm demanding a new trial. You're going out of here flying.
And Galahad Dove did go out flying, right back to the city jail. And back came his unscrupulous attorney, Renegade Tort, to gouge him.
Well, double boy.
Yeah?
I gotta have more money. How much you got?
I got $200 in the bank.
Good. Write me out a check. You're going out of here flying.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm swearing you out of writ in Flea Grande Mephisto. Yeah, that dame with the sprained ankle double-crossed you, Dom. I gotta get a new witness.
Can you get another witness?
Say, for $200, I can get a perjurer. You're going out of here flying.
But 6 months later, we still find Galahad Dove in court. His gouging attorney, Renegade Tort, is still with him. The trial opens.
Galahad Dove?
I'm still here, Judge.
And he's still not guilty, Judge.
Not guilty in the damage suit or the gum littering charge?
Not guilty across the board, Judge.
That's a lie, Judge. I can swear he plopped out the gun.
That testimony's a shambles of lies, Judge.
Oh, you shite.
Come on, I'll slap you with a subpoena.
Order, order, order in the court. Now, what have you got to say, Tort?
I got a new witness, Judge. Sit up, stranger.
Okay.
Hector Shuffle?
Yeah, I'm a picket, Judge. I was picketing a Frankfurter stand on Broadway. The Frankfurters Union, I was picketing the mustard.
Yes, go on.
Well, I stepped on the gum and my foot got stuck to the pavement. A walking delegate from the union come by and seen I wasn't walking up and down, so I lost my job picketing.
Do you swear that Millie Twerp didn't step on the gum?
No, it was me. I got stuck on it, Judge. I lost my job. My wife heard about it and jumped out a window and was killed. I'm charging this guy with murder.
I said nothing.
Quiet, Dub. You are now the defendant in 3 suits, expectorating your gum, damages, and murder.
Murder? I only spit out my gum.
Keep your shirt on, Dub. You're going out of here flying.
But did he? No. Back when Galahad Dub to jail to await his trial for murder, the knavish barrister... The knavish barrister, renegade tort, again is found in the cell with his bewildered client.
Murder's a tough rap to beat, Dub.
Yeah, but all I did was spit out my gum. Why couldn't I plead guilty?
What, and get a fine? Where would I come in? I gotta get mine, ain't I?
Now I'm up for murder.
I'll beat this case, Dub. They ain't pulling no fast one on renegade talk.
Good for me. What do I do now?
You got any more dough?
Well, I got less of my insurance policy, but $2,000. It's right here.
Okay, sign it, Dub.
All right, here you are. This makes you my beneficiary.
Right, now we're getting someplace. You're going out of here flying.
And after 3 years in jail, we find our hero, Galahad Dub, again in court. And again, his faithless attorney... His faithless attorney, renegade tort, has the case in hand.
The people versus Galahad Dub. The charge is murder.
Hey, look, Judge, all I
My client's innocent, Judge.
It has been proven that as a result of Galahad Dub's voiding his gum on a public thoroughfare, Hector Shuffle lost his job as a picket, and Mrs. Shuffle became mentally deranged and took a dry dive out of her third-story window. The court hereby finds the defendant, Galahad Dub, guilty of murder.
What's the sentence, Judge?
You have a choice on this verdict. Your client can either have the chair or life imprisonment.
Well, I'll take life.
Hold it, Dub. We'll take the chair, Judge.
What?
Very well. Galahad Dub.
Yeah?
The court hereby sentences you to die in the electric chair.
Oh. Congratulations, Dub. We put it over.
But you kept saying, Dub, you're going out of here flying.
Oh, my mistake, Dub. You're going out of here flying.
Thus ends the strange case of Galahad Dub, who is gouged into Wingdom Come by that nefarious barrister, renegade tort. The moral, ladies and gentlemen, spitting out your gum on the street is like giving your case to an unreliable attorney. You're sure to get stuck in the end.
Thank you. And now the Merry Max, ladies and gentlemen, if they'll stop applauding me long enough to sing. Tonight they'll swing, the Campbells are coming.
They're coming to join us to laugh and be gay. They're coming to make this a gay holiday. Mr. Hilton, two dolls, they are marching along. They're coming to join us in laughter and song. Hilton's
through down, they are marching along. The camels are coming, hooray, hooray, hooray. Thank you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, in an effort...
Telegram for Mr. Allen. Telegram for Mr. Allen.
Now, don't be repetitious, boy. Give it here. Thank you. Fred Allen, Town Hall, so on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Dear Fred, tell Andre Baruch to look under carpet at left of microphone. Signed, guess who? Look under, guess who? If there's anything I loathe, it's whimsy.
Fred, do you suppose guess who is Harry Von Zell?
Probably Von Zell the Pixie. Well, look under the carpet. Maybe he's hiding there. I'll bet he didn't go on his vacation after all, Andre.
No, you're wrong, Fred. It's a message. It says, Dear Andre, will you do me a favor? Will you remind our listeners that it would be a good idea to buy their sal hepatica before the drugstores close tonight? Because you never know what morning you're going to wake up feeling headachy and logy. And the sooner a person gets after that under-par feeling with sal hepatica, the sooner he's apt to feel like himself again. And I'd appreciate it if you'd explain why. Sincerely, Harry Von Zell.
Why don't you, Andre? The explanation is really very simple.
There it is at that, Fred. Because the two things that usually cause a sluggish feeling, ladies and gentlemen, are the two very things sal hepatica was especially made to get after. Accumulated waste and gastric acidity. So whenever the need for a laxative is indicated, just put two teaspoonfuls of sal hepatica in a glass of water and drink it. You'll be surprised how soon you'll feel alert, alive, more like your old normal self again when you take sal hepatica.
Van Steeden and the Ipana Troubadours have just played Strike Up the Band, not from the picture, not of that name. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I know you didn't expect to meet...
Whom do we not expect to meet tonight, Fred?
Well, this is National Airmail Week, Andre, and I'm going to interview a gentleman who has not only flown airmail, he's been an airplane mechanic, he has given barnstorming exhibitions, he's been a test pilot. In fact, our guest this evening has spent so much time in the air that eagles nod to him as he flies by these days. And so tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I know you didn't expect to meet Mr. Ralph W. Smith. Good evening, Mr. Smith.
Good evening, Fred.
Well, that puts it squarely up to me, Ralph. Now, how long have you been engaged in defying the law of gravity and heavier than aircraft?
I have been flying since 1928.
10 years. And in those 10 years, approximately, how much time have you spent in the air?
About 3,000 hours, Fred.
3,000 hours. And how many of these hours did you spend in the airmail service, Ralph?
I flew mail between Detroit and Cleveland for 3 years.
Well, I guess flying the mail gets discouraging at times, doesn't it?
How do you mean, Fred?
Why, a mail pilot flies through snow, sleet, storms, and gales. He finally lands exhausted to deliver a letter that says... Junior has the measles. How is Aunt Minnie? Did you put out that little light under the ice bar?
I think most airmail letters are more important than that, Fred.
Well, I hope so. And I think it's only fitting and proper that the nation should observe National Airmail Week each year.
Yes, the airmail service has made rapid strides during the past 20 years.
You know, there's another figure in aviation who has been arousing the interest of the public lately, Ralph, the test pilot. You have engaged in this work, too, haven't you?
Yes, I tested planes for the Thompson Aeronautical Corporation back in 1930.
Well, that's nerve-wracking work, isn't it?
Something tells me you've been seeing your test pilot in the movies, Fred.
Do you mean to stand there, Ralph W. Smith, and tell me that all the test pilots haven't got dimples like Clark Gable, and their wives aren't as pretty as Myrna Loy?
Modern test pilots aren't glamour boys, Fred. Many of them are college graduate engineers with a scientific approach to their work.
Oh, that's your story. I saw those movie pilots.
I don't think you find most movie stars use doubles.
Well, they might occasionally, Ralph. You know, it isn't generally known, but I had a double in the last picture I made.
Were you in any danger making Sally, Irene, and Mary?
Well, not making the picture, Ralph. But when the picture was released, it was pretty risky for me to be seen out around on the street. I hired a reasonable facsimile to walk down Broadway for me until the picture blew over.
I didn't think you were so bad, Fred.
Well, that's only one. What's your opinion and mine against so many, Ralph? But enough about my celluloid faux pas. I understand you were with Admiral Byrd on his last trip to the South Pole. Is that right?
Yes, Fred. I left for the South Pole in 1933.
In what capacity did you serve on the expedition?
As pilot, which also included navigation and radio.
How many men were in the group?
56.
You must have taken plenty of supplies along.
We carried over 300 tons of food and equipment, 12,000 gallons of gasoline, 4 airplanes, 4 tractors, and 3 cows.
3 cows. Did the cows give milk in that extreme cold weather?
Oh, yes.
You know, I always thought that when the temperature got below zero, a cow gave milksicles. or those good humor sticks.
No, Fred, those cows came in mighty handy.
Yes, I guess in that cold you fellas could use 3 extra jerseys. Well, how low does the thermometer go at the pole?
The lowest temperature we found was 82 below.
Well, tell me, did the 6 months' night bother you much outside of making your pajamas pretty baggy?
Total darkness only lasted for about 4.5 months at the pole, Fred.
Say, 4.5 months? A guy with a nightmare there has got something, hasn't he? What would you say was the greatest kick you got out of your stay at the South Pole?
I guess it was the day we discovered the mountain range, Fred.
Were you the first to set eyes on the mountain?
Yes, Fred. Commander Byrd credits me with this find in his book, Discovery.
Say, speaking of Commander Byrd, he could have used you last Monday, Ralph. I read in the paper where the commander got lost over at the Jamaica Station in Long Island and missed his train. Missed the train to Babylon. I hope this will be a good lesson to you, Ralph. If you ever start out to find a town on Long Island, take your compass with you every time.
I'll remember that, Fred.
Yes, you're apt to end up at Oyster Bay in a month with no R in it. How long were you away with Commander Byrd's expedition?
We left in September 1933 and returned May the 10th, 1935.
What branch of aviation are you active in now, Ralph?
I'm doing aerial display work, Fred.
Skywriting?
No, I tow those banners and signs you see advertising different products in the air.
Oh, those Welkin commercials they have? Well, I guess that's easier than skywriting. I know a pilot who flew up 3 miles and spelled out Fitch's Fine Finn and Hattie. And when he landed, he had to go right back up again. He'd forgotten to dot the I's. Now, in all your 10 years, my relatives always applaud the least thing. I should put them outside. In all your 10 years of flying, Ralph, have you ever cracked out?
No, Fred, I've never experienced a major accident.
Well, I take it that you consider aviation a safe means of travel.
I certainly do, Fred, and it's getting safer every day. Planes are constantly being improved. weather predictions are more accurate, and the increasing use of the radio beam tends to make flying as safe as walking.
Safer probably on weekends with those Sunday drivers. But would you advise a young man today to go in for aviation?
If he's willing to put in plenty of hard work, yes, Fred.
Well, how about women aviators?
Oh, no, you don't.
I get it. Say, I know a girl who'd have made a great pilot if she hadn't gone into the theater.
Who, Fred?
Sally Rand. You know, I don't know how she'd have been on a three-point landing, but she used to be a demon taking off. Thanks a lot for your little treatise on aviation and snow, Ralph. I know that you volunteered to take part in National Airmail Week and fly the mail on one of these special flights being arranged tomorrow as part of the program.
Yes, Fred, my application has been accepted, and I'm flying the mail tomorrow.
I see. Well, say, if you have any trouble getting your plane away from Floyd Bennett Field, just give me a ring, Ralph.
Do you think you can help me out, Fred?
Why, with me at the wheel, you're going out of there flying.
I'll keep that in mind, Fred. Thanks, and good night.
And good night, and many happy landings, Ralph W. Smith. And now the Town Hall Quartet, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, the boys get right down to the Cobb for their inspiration and sing, "It's Corny, but It's Fun."
Lately, there's been so much said about this thing called swing. Till you've learned each player's name, you just don't know a thing.
Well, that may be the modern way, and they may have something there.
But I prefer the corny stuff, I'm just long underwear.
I like to snap my fingers when the band is playing jazz.
It's corny, but it's fun.
And I like to watch the leader man when he gives it all he has.
It's corny, but it's fun. I always ask an orchestra to make it hot and snappy. I don't care if it's good as long as everybody's happy.
And I like to yell expressions like, "Yeah, man," and "Razzmatazz."
It's corny, but it's fun.
I like to sing high tenor when they sing Sweet Daddy Line.
Well, that's corny.
I know, but it's my main holder. And I like to tuck my napkin into my collar when I dine.
That's awful corny.
True, but it tickles my fancy.
I don't know the Big Apple, but I always try to fake it. And even if it kills me, I gotta show 'em I can take it.
I always tell my partner that her dancing is divine.
It's corny, but it's fun. We like to borrow money so our friends won't think we're cheap. We know it's corny, but it's fun, such fun. We like to go to weddings where they stand around and weep. We know it's corny, but it's fun.
I got a one-piece bathing suit, but I refuse to try it.
And he always hates to get it wet because he'll only have to dry it.
We wake up every now and then to see if we're asleep. It's corny, but it's fun.
Rain the cold,
crowd it out, such fun.
Gentlemen, I wonder if anyone in our audience has a book called How to Behave at a Barbecue.
Why, Fred?
Well, in case I should be invited to one, Andre. You know, nowadays they have all sorts of books telling you how to be a social success under any circumstances. There's a lot of rules to being popular, you know.
Oh, I don't know, Fred. Seems to me that just two or three rules will see anyone through in fine style.
What two or three, for instance?
Well, be a good listener. Make a point of remembering names correctly. Take an interest in other people's problems. And remember that an attractive smile invites confidence and is therefore your greatest asset.
Oh, of course. A nice smile is always a big help.
You bet it is, Fred. That's why we say, if you have an attractive smile, ladies and gentlemen, keep it that way with the help of Ipana toothpaste and massage. If you don't have an attractive smile, then by all means change to Ipana and massage tomorrow. Because Ipana was especially designed not only to clean and brighten your teeth, but when used with massage, to help give your gums the exercise and stimulation they fail to get from the soft, creamy, well-cooked food you eat, the toning they need to help guard against gum trouble. And with healthier gums and brighter teeth, your smile just has to be more attractive. The only way you'll ever know how much Ipana will help you, ladies and gentlemen, is to try it. So say to yourself right now, tomorrow I'll start using Ipana. Ladies and gentlemen, Town Hall tonight will continue immediately after a short pause for your station identification.
WEAF, New York.
Peter Van Steeden and the Ipana Troubadours have just played Great Day. Peter was a little pressed for time, so he couldn't give us all of Great Day, just a dash of the forenoon, as it were. Now, on Friday night... They're not here, neither of them. The boys have gone. They went that way.
Hello.
Well, sir, they...
Gosh, the studio seems kind of empty without Harry.
Oh, I wouldn't say Mr. Von Zell was that fat, Portland.
Who's taking Harry's place?
Oh, sir, that's right. You haven't met our new announcer. I'll introduce you. Oh, Andre.
Yes, Fred.
Portland, this is Harry's understudy, Andre Baruch.
Well, this is indeed a pleasure, Portland.
Thank you. Have you met Peter Van Steeden, Mr. Baruch?
No, I haven't.
Peter?
Yes, Portland.
This is our new announcer, Mr. Andre Baruch.
Glad to know you, Andre. The pleasure's all mine, Mr. Van Steeden.
Oh, just call me Happy Andre. And any time you want to laugh, just let me know.
Peter's some comedian, Mr. Baruch.
Oh, really? I thought you conducted the orchestra, Happy. I don't know where people get that impression, Andre. Music's just a sideline with me now. I do most of the comedy on the program.
Do most of the comedy, hey? With your back to the audience there? What do you do if your mug dislocates your neck? The only confidential mugger on radio. Say, you do all of the comedy. Somebody ought to give you to a Mickey Finn.
There's a little jealousy on the program, Andre. Certain party.
Yes, Peter doesn't want to mention any names, Mr. Baruch, but it's Mr. Allen.
Oh, it's... I should be jealous of a musician who thinks four in the bar is a quartet drinking.
Don't believe all you hear on this program, Andre.
Now listen, Satchmouth Van Steeden. The stork must have brought you on a rainy night, and you've been all wet ever since.
Have I got an answer for that?
What is it, Peter?
Oh, I'm no show-off. I can hold it.
You know what retarding an egg does to a hen, I suppose.
Don't listen to that old acid puss, Andre.
Acid puss? Now look, nozzlehead. If you had some sawdust on that pan of yours, I couldn't tell it from the face on the barroom floor.
Have I got an answer for that?
What is it, Peter?
Oh, it's a dandy, but I'm still holding it.
I bet you're laughing inside, Peter.
If his inside knows what his outside looks like, he certainly is.
Quiet, Stooge. I've got to ask Andre a question.
Yeah?
Yes, Happy? How are you on laughing for my jokes?
Why don't you tell Mr. Baruch one, Peter, and find out?
That's an idea. I will.
Let's go, Peter. What's your joke?
Did you hear what Jack Benny is naming his new racehorse, Andre?
No. What is Jack Benny naming his new racehorse, Happy?
NBC Biscuit.
NBC Biscuit.
Okay, Andre, you'll do.
Now, look. He certainly will do if he can laugh like that at nothing. Now, look. People who have seen Benny riding his horse around Hollywood tell me that when Benny's on the horse, you can't tell where the horse leaves off and Benny starts. Come in.
Telegram for Mr. Allen.
Oh, thank you, boy.
Aren't you going to wait for a tip, boy?
That's Allen, ain't it?
Uh-huh.
So long.
Why, that uniformed squirt. Why, I should have snapped his bicycle clips for him. If I was reaching down, I'd have done it, too.
Who's the telegram from, Mr.
Here, Allen? I'm too upset. You read it.
Say, what do you know? It's from Harry Von Zell.
What does Harry say, Portland?
Dear Fred, I am up in the thick of the woods. Just heard the first part of your program. Wish you were here.
Why, that ingrate, that overstuffed loafer, I'll and how I'll. Yes, yes, that's saved by a knock on the door. I was to have told him.
Come right in, Gramps. Yeah, hold on. Wait till I get my gear.
Now, just a minute, you two.
Mr. Allen?
Yeah?
Just let me press what's hanging out of your sleeve.
This, fringe?
No, your hand, brother. You are now in conference with Baxter B. Blurt, the world's greatest showman and talent scout.
Well,
That's what you say, brother.
Well, I didn't...
I got a tip Harry Von Zell was off your program.
Yeah? How did you know?
Coming downtown, people was throwing their radios out the window.
Coming down. You didn't go uptown, did you? See how it was going?
See, tell him who I am, Baxter.
Wait till I schmooze him once over lightly, Graham.
Now, wait a minute. None of that.
While Von Zell's away, you're going to need plenty of talent on this program, Alan.
Tell him who I am, Baxter.
I'll bite. Who are you?
I'm Red Hot Gramp. They call me the Toscanini of the odds and ends.
Toscanini?
Yep. Gramp can get music out of anything, Alan.
Lord, yes. I can play on anything from a matchbox to a toy balloon.
Gramp's a virtuoso on debris, Alan. He can play a tune on an ash barrel.
Now, look, I have no...
Tell him what I did in Bellows Falls.
What did you do in Bellows Falls?
The woodpeckers brought the theater back so Gramp could give a recital.
They brought the theater back?
Yes, sir, you bet. Tell him what I did at Biddeford, Maine.
Gramp played a bowling alley at Biddeford and stood him up.
I haven't got time to talk to pin boys.
Gramp holds the audition record for 1937, brother.
Oh, yes. I played for Major Bowles, got insulted, was packed up and out of the hall in 4 minutes flat.
But you...
No buts. Let it go, Gramp.
Yes, sir. My first number I'm playing on an ordinary paper of matches.
Hey, you can't get music out of those matches.
I can't. Hey, listen to this. Ready with your accordion, Baxter?
Okay.
Hit it, son.
How's that, Bud? Ready for an encore?
No, I don't want...
Fine. My next selection, I'm playing on this carving knife.
Say, wait a minute. What are you doing with that dirt?
Gramp's gonna play the knife, brother.
You darn tootin'. I'm gonna play this ordinary steel knife with this violin bow.
Take it away, Gramp.
Give me time. I've gotta set the knife again, Adam's apple. Okay.
How's that, lame brain?
You know I can't answer that question truthfully over the air.
Jiggity, I'm a homeboy at heart, but I sure went to town.
Fine, now if you'll just pick up that musical cutlery there.
Hey, you ain't heading off, Gramp, till he gets to his big finale, Bud.
You bet. I'm winding up with his toy balloon. Wait till I blow her up.
I don't know what it is. I pet babies. I don't pick flowers. I give folks in wheelchairs the right of way. And everything happens to me.
Quiet, Bud. Gramps all set for his balloon solo.
Okie dokie. Let her go, Professor.
What was that, a quarter note backfired?
My Gramps' balloon busted.
It's okie doke, I can still play her.
Well, don't tell me you've got another balloon.
No, sir, I'm making a little balloon out of the big one that just broke.
Yeah, you can't stop Gramps, Bub.
So I've discovered.
Let her go, boy.
Did you blow a filling there at the end?
Yeah, that was... how'd you like that?
Is that the end?
That is the grand finale, brother.
Fine.
Well, what do you got to say? Am I getting Harry Von Zell's job?
It's up to Portland. What do you say, Portland?
Tally ho!
And now, if history can repeat itself, why not the Merry Max? For their second number, they swing, "Put on your old gray bonnet."
Put on your old gray bonnet with the blue ribbons on it, and we'll hitch old Dobbin to the shay. Through the fields of clover we will ride to Dover on our golden wedding day. Put on your old gray bonnet with blue ribbons on it, and we'll hitch old Dobbin to the shay. Through the fields of clover we will ride to Dover on our golden wedding day. Put on your old gray bonnet with blue ribbons on it, and we'll hitch old Dobbin to the shake-dee-wee-da-dee-wee-da-da. Through the fields of clover we will ride on to Dover, on a golden wedding day. Put on your old gray bonnet with the blue ribbons on it, and we'll hitch old Dobbin to the shay, old Dobbin to the shay. Through the fields of clover we will ride on to Dover on our golden wedding day. Through the fields of clover we will ride to Dover on a golden wedding day.
We have with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen, a man who is here for the express purpose of giving something away. My friend and able colleague, Andre Baruch.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm giving away is advice. For I know that at some time or other, there isn't one of you who won't need it. Whenever you're feeling headachy, sluggish, or logy, I advise you to put 2 teaspoonfuls of sal hepatica in a glass of water and drink it. And it's very important that it be sal hepatica. Because if you take something with a laxative action only, you have done nothing to help counteract gastric acidity. So it may be some time before you feel like your old normal self again. But when you take sal hepatica, you're getting double help. Because as so many physicians will tell you,
as a laxative, sal hepatica brings you speedy relief. As an antacid, sal hepatica counteracts gastric acidity. And naturally, that gives you a quick comeback.
So buy a bottle of sal hepatica from your druggist tomorrow. See how soon your head is clearer, your pep is back, and how fast you're on your toes again, thanks to the double help of sal hepatica.
Intelligent face, you have a disgraceful charm for me.
You couldn't be keener, you look so fresh from the cleaner.
You are the little grand slam I'll bring to my family.
My ma will show you an album of me that'll bore you to tears. And you'll attract all the relatives we have dodged for years and years. And what will they tell me? Exactly what will they tell me?
They'll say you couldn't be nicer, couldn't be sweeter,
couldn't be better, couldn't be smoother, couldn't be cuter, baby, than you are.
Ladies and gentlemen, Town Hall tonight will continue immediately after a short pause for your station identification.
Thank you. The Golly, whoever put me to sleep should have awakened me there when they finished. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Van Steeden, the Ipana Troubadour, is the Town Hall Quartet, and I have just finished for you You Couldn't Be Cuter. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the mighty Allen Art Players. Tonight, they offer a tribute to a popular radio comedian and present a musical tableau called This Is the House That Jack Built. Overture, Peter. Every Sunday night during the past few months, radio listeners have been hearing about the house Jack Benny is building in Beverly Hills. We all know of the alleged progress the builders and termites have made. And between Jell-O commercials, Mr. Benny has boasted, with his California sun-kissed ego, that he and his violin will occupy their new home, as the escrow flies, on May 18, 1938. Ah, but Willie. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a cavalcade showing that down through the ages, the Bennies have been building houses they have never lived in, proving that a Benny has yet to cross the threshold of a dwelling and say to himself, this is home sweet home. The first Benny missed living in his own home in 200,000 B.C. He was a prehistoric ne'er-do-well. Gog Benny, a stonecutter. Gog lived in a swamp and his days were spent chiseling words on rocks, for he was a Stone Age author whose light fiction even weighed 80 or 90 tons. One morning, Gog Benny was chipping away at a rock. A stranger stopped and spoke to him.
You Gog Benny?
Busy, writing sonnet.
Me from Stone Age Real Estate Corporation. You ought a company build you cave? Cave finish.
How much?
One brontosaurus tusk down, one leopard tooth a week.
Too much. Offer half.
Stone Age Real Estate Corporation, one price company.
Gog Benny, one price too. Offer half.
Deal off.
Gog Benny stay in swamp. Spend life cutting stone.
Gog Benny will die as he lives. A chiseler.
Yes, the first Benny was a chiseler. And his parsimony kept him from moving into the cave he had ordered built by the Stone Age Real Estate Corporation. But the world spun on its dizzy way, and the next Benny to defile the pages of history turned up in the 12th century. Stradivarius Benny, a wandering violin player, ordered a house to be built in the little village of Pisa in Italy. The house was finally completed, and Michelangelo, the architect, called for Stradivarius Benny to show him his new home. The two men were walking along the Plaza del Broccoli. Stradivarius Benny spoke.
We have walked a great distance, Michelangelo.
Your house, she's just around this corner, Signor Stradivarius.
Where?
Take a look, please, across the plaza.
Egad, that's not a house. It's a tower.
She's like a lighthouse, round and high.
Well, why did you build me this fancy chimney?
Because the Signor Benny is a cheap. I'm going to need 2,000 lira for bricks, so you give me 50. I'm going to need 1,000 lira for shingles, you give me 15. I'm going to need 300 lira for cement. Signor Stradivari Pussy Benny, he's giving me nothing. What I can build, I'm a build. It's a tower.
Well, the price is right. I'll make it do.
Yeah, take a look inside. I'm going to open the door. Go in.
All right. Help!
What's the matter for you?
I just stepped inside the door and the whole tower tipped to the side.
Sure, yes, I know. Signores are too cheap to buy cement.
Look, the whole tower is leaning.
I suggested what I'm expecting.
What have you used for the foundation?
What I'm using? Jell-O.
And today, ladies and gentlemen, the house that was never lived in by Stradivarius Benny still has its Jell-O foundation, and it is called the Leaning Tower of Pisa. For three centuries, nothing is known of the Bennies, but in 1645 A.D., in the tiny town of Cuchentilloch in Scotland, one Jock McBenny, a bagpipe teacher, started to build his own shanty. He was almost finished. On the last day, he was hammering away.
Well, good morrow to you, Jack McBenny.
Aye, good day to you, Mrs. McFickle.
It's a bonny house you're building.
Aye, it's bonny.
What are those two big holes in the roof?
One hole is the bathroom. When it rains, it's a shower bath.
Aye, but t'other hole?
That's the night reading room. I can read by the light of the moon. My house will be finished tomorrow.
Good. The whole village will be here for the housewarming, Jock.
Housewarming? I can build my own fires, Mrs. McFickle.
A housewarming is a celebration, Jock.
Celebration?
Aye. When a house is finished, folks gather from miles around to eat, drink, and be merry.
At whose expense?
At yours, Jack McBenny.
They eat my haggis and drink my spirits?
Aye, the minute your house is finished.
Then the house of Jack McBenny will never be finished, Mrs. McFackle.
But, Jack, the champion tightwad of Scotland gave a house waterman.
Then take a look at the new champion, Mrs. McFackle. It's Jack McBenny.
And Jack McBenny held the teetwad championship until his dying day. To save the price of a hoose warming, he never moved into his hoose. Early in the 18th century, colonists started flocking to America. And in 1733, a Benny suddenly appeared as if by magic in Philadelphia. He was Truman Benny, a chime salesman, who was later to sell a cracked bell to the city. Truman and his wife, Faith Livingston, live and died in Philadelphia. They begat many little Bennies who overran the city. And finally, the state in which Philadelphia found itself was called Bennysylvania. In 1849, the gold rush started, and a cross-eyed Benny, one snag-tooth, got off the California trail and ended up with his covered wagon at Waukegan, Illinois. Waukegan was a rip-snorting trading post. The fit survived. Dog ate dog and vice versa. And the villagers were so tough, the babies were teethed on each other. Snagtooth Benny decided to settle down in Waukegan. He paid a formal visit to the mayor.
Where's the mayor of Waukegan?
I'm the mayor, stranger. Two Gun Talk, it's the name.
I'm Snagtooth Benny. I'm aiming to settle here in Waukegan.
Man's gotta be pretty tough to reside here, partner.
Well, I'm so tough I got my boots laced with rattlesnakes. The buttons on my coat is black widow spiders. And I got a wildcat outside watching my duffel bag.
A Boy Scout, eh?
That's right. I'm aiming to get me a cabin here in Waukegan.
Jesse James was telling me that none of you Bennies ever get to live in your own houses.
Well, Snagtooth Benny is defying that tradition. I'm getting into my own shebang.
Well, come on. I'll get you a cabin next door.
Let's go.
Yes, sir. Caverns is mighty scarce here in Waukegan.
This shebang next door empty?
Nope. There's a couple living here. I'll see if they're to hunt.
But do you think they'll vacate?
I'll show you how we take care of the housing problem here in Waukegan.
Howdy, Mayor Talcott.
Howdy, Mrs. Rumpus. Where's your meat?
Musty is peeling a puma. Say, Musty.
Yeah?
Two Gun Talcott to see you.
Yeah, well, what's on your mind, Two Gun?
As Mayor of Waukegan, I'm a-renting this cabin to Snagtooth Benny.
But we're living here, Mayor.
Yeah, you ain't putting me and Mrs. Rumpus out without a dispossessed.
Here's your dispossessed, Musty.
Oh.
And here's your Mrs. Musty.
Oh.
And there's your cabin, Snagtooth.
Thank you, Mayor Talcott. I appreciate your hospitality here, but I ain't so keen on your manners.
What's wrong with Waukegan's manners, Snagtooth?
You shouldn't have plugged the man to start, Two Gun. Where I come from, it's ladies first.
Them's fighting words, Snagtooth.
And I'm a... Ow!
You're dead, Benny. Jesse James was right. A Benny never gets to live in his own house.
And so the first Benny to come to Waukegan left in spirit without setting material foot inside of his house. Other Bennies came to Waukegan later, but they lived in parking spaces. and formed little communities in pool rooms behind the eight ball. In 1902, A. J. Hamilton, Benny, went into politics. He ran for representative. All Waukegan was in the taxidermist that night to hear the election result.
Well, do you think you'll get in, J. Hamilton, Benny?
Anything short of unanimous will be a blow.
Quiet. Here come the election returns on the radio.
Cheerio. This is Boak Jefferson bringing you the final election returns. Patrick Henry, 11,671 votes. J. Hamilton, Benny, 7. Henry Clay Lemke, 1. J. Hamilton Benny decisively defeated for representative. Cheerio.
Oh, too bad, J. Hamilton Benny.
Oh, shame, Mr. Benny.
Ah, it's that fatal Benny curse. I should have run for the Senate.
Why couldn't you be a representative, J. Hamilton?
No Benny yet has been able to get into the House.
J. Hamilton Benny, a politician, told the truth. No Benny yet has ever gotten into the House. And today, May 18th, 1938 A.D., Jack Benny was supposed to move into his new house. We bring you a last-minute flash from Beverly Hills, showing exactly just what happened a few minutes ago. Jack and Mary approached the house with the builder. The builder said,
"Well, Mr. Benny, here's your house all finished."
"Isn't it beautiful, Jack?"
"Yeah, it sure is. Let's look inside. I'll open the door."
"Oh, you can't open the door, Mr. Benny."
"Why not?"
"There's no doorknob."
"Well, get one."
"That's $2.
$2? Come on, Mary.
"Oh, aren't we going into our new house, Jack?"
"No, we're going back where we came from." $2 for a doorknob."
"But where will we sleep?"
"In the barn. My horse will have to move over."
So you... Mr. Benny is cursed. If it is a matter of letting go of $2... he will never live in his new house. He is just another Benny doomed to tread the path, worn thin through the ages by hundreds of Bennies who have never been able to live in any house they have planned. This is the story of the house that Jack built. The end. We sincerely hope you've enjoyed Town Hall tonight. If you have, the friendliest and most substantial way you can say so is by your purchases and use of the two products that make all of our Wednesdays together possible.
Ipana toothpaste for the smile of beauty, Sal Hepatica for the smile of health. Ipana, Sal Hepatica.
Thank you, Andre. And music.